Skip ahead about 40 seconds if the resources I've been giving bother you. And thank you all for your support and encouragement. I won't stop. Here they are again. There is a crisis text line set up for those suffering from anxiety or depression. Text 741-741 for help. If you are experiencing suicidal thoughts, please call the National Suicide Hotline at 1-800-273-TALK or 8255. If you are suffering from domestic violence, please call 1-800-799-SAFE or 7233 or dial 911. The Trevor Project has a hotline for young LGBTQ people who are struggling. Call 1-866-488-7386. Remember, you are not alone. I'll have international resources as well as these U.S. numbers in today's show notes. Southern Fried True Crime covers cases that are not suitable for young listeners, and there may also be some explicit language used. Today's episode will have upsetting homophobic language used only in quotes. I apologize, but words matter, especially when discussing a hate crime. Listener discretion is advised. It's Pride Month, friends. June was chosen by the LGBTQ community to honor the Stonewall Uprising, which was the tipping point for the gay liberation movement in the United States. June 28th marks the 51st anniversary of the Stonewall riots. Pride is now a celebration, not just parades all across America, but also a month of concerts, parties, workshops, and symposiums. As we celebrate how far we've come, we also honor and memorialize victims of hate crimes. On February 19, 1999, a gay man named Billy Jack Gaither was brutally murdered in the small town of Sylacauga, Alabama. It was the third hate crime in small-town America within a nine-month period. James Byrd, a 49-year-old black man, was murdered by three white supremacists on June 7, 1998 in Jasper, Texas. And Matthew Shepard, a 22-year-old gay college student, was murdered in Laramie, Wyoming on October 12, 1998. Both James and Matthew suffered vicious torture before they were murdered, and their deaths sparked national outrage. But just 4 months after Matthew, Billy Jack's murder also made national headlines. It brought about activism in the state of Alabama, and annual vigils are held on the steps of the Capitol building in Montgomery. But despite years of work by activists and Democratic legislators, sexual orientation is still not a part of Alabama's hate crime statute. It's on a bill introduced this year, and it's on its way through the Senate, but not because of Billy Jack Gaither. Welcome to episode 100, Small Town Hate, the murder of Billy Jack Gaither. Sylacauga, Alabama is located in Talladega County in the eastern central portion of the state. That's in the Coosa River Valley area, where Creek Native Americans first lived. By 1836, all Native Americans in the area were forcibly removed and massacred by the United States government during the Trail of Tears, which started with the Indian Removal Act of 1830 and went through 1877 after the Civil War. The word Sylacauga derives from the two Native American words Chilaca Gay, which literally means the place of the Chilaca tribe. Sylacauga was incorporated in 1838 with a different spelling, and then in 1837 with the current spelling, Sylacauga. It is known as the Marble City because it lies on a solid deposit of the hardest, most beautiful white marble in the world. The marble was used in the construction of the United States Supreme Court building, as well as many other historic buildings around the country. The marble was discovered in 1820 by a physician traveling with then-General Andrew Jackson, and the deposit was part of the Murphy Marble Belt, extending 32 by 1.5 miles or 51 by 2.41 kilometers, and 400 feet or 120 meters deep. Sylacauga began hosting an annual marble festival in 1998, featuring gorgeous sculptures. I'll have a YouTube link in today's show notes where you can see the amazing art. The town is also infamous for having the first documented case of a person being hit by a meteorite in 1954, or, as headlines at the time screamed, a rock from outer space. Mrs. Ann Hodges was badly bruised during her afternoon nap when it crashed into the roof of the home she was renting. Because she rented the home, she got in a legal battle with the owners over possession of the meteorite. The family that owned it, the Guys, eventually settled with Mrs. Hodges, who had to buy it for $500. That's close to $5,000 today. But she became so upset over the national attention that she donated what is now known as Hodges Meteorite to the Alabama Museum of Natural History in 1956. The town of Sylacauga, Alabama, had less than 13,000 residents and 70 churches when Billy Jack Gaither lived and died there. For perspective, I live in a city of about 150,000 people, and we have 140 churches. We are almost 11 times bigger, but have only twice as many churches. There were only around 100 gay people in Sylacauga, and none of them were open about it. Most of the gay people in town, including Billy, would travel to gay bars in Birmingham or Montgomery to hang out so they could be themselves. Billy Jack Gaither was born on January 21st, 1960, to parents Marion and Lois. His parents were deeply religious, and so was Billy, a complicated thing for a young gay man. All of his life, Billy was very involved with his Baptist church, singing in the choir and never missing services. He especially loved gospel music. He kept a Bible on his nightstand and was said to have read from it every night. Billy Jack had four brothers and two sisters. One sister, named Kathy, is also gay. He has been described as quiet and easygoing. Marion Hammond, owner of the tavern, Billy's favorite local bar, said about him, quote, "He was one of them special people you instantly took a liking to." His brother Ricky said Billy was a soft, loving, and gentle spirit. He was a good guy who would stand up for the underdog. One friend said he had a laugh that came from his heart. Everything came from his heart. In school, Billy was often bullied. He was called a fag and a queer. His brother Ricky said the name-calling was difficult for Billy to deal with in such a small town. Billy Jack dropped out of high school in the 11th grade and later got his GED. But he stood up for himself and his siblings. He didn't like bullies, and he would also put his brothers in check if he thought they were bullying someone else. According to Billy's brother Ricky, if you triggered his button, you better be ready. Billy's parents told the New York Times that after he got his GED, he enlisted in the Marines, but was honorably discharged a year later due to high blood pressure. When Billy was 19, Ricky had a discussion with him about his sexuality. Billy denied being gay, and Ricky assured him that it was okay if he was. Billy Jack reportedly said, "Well, I'm not gay, but maybe bisexual." His sister Kathy also confronted Billy around this age. He also tried to deny it to her, but Kathy was also gay, and she told him in no uncertain words that he was gay and he needed to figure it out. According to his siblings, Billy really did try to be straight for the sake of his parents. He was even engaged to a girl once. He was also worried about what the Bible said about being gay. Leviticus is particularly specific and harsh towards homosexuality. Quote, "You shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination." Leviticus 18:22. And, "If a man lies with a male as with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood is upon them." Leviticus 20:13. You can only imagine, as a young gay man brought up in a deeply religious family, how upsetting it would be to read that in the Bible and hear your preacher quote that scripture in a sermon. It wasn't just his parents. He loved his church and God, and he sadly seemed to believe when he was young that God would judge him rather than love him for his sexuality. But at 39 years old, he seemed to have accepted himself and his place in Sylacauga. He was not out to his parents, and friends say he never flaunted his sexuality. But if you asked him, he would tell the truth. Marion Hammond, his friend and the local bar owner, said that if someone tried to provoke Billy by asking, "Are you a faggot?" he would say, "Yes, and I love it," and then walk away. And he was still happily involved in his church. At the time of his death, 39-year-old Billy was 6'2" tall. He was dark-complected and wore his black hair rather long in the back, though not quite a mullet. He wasn't conventionally handsome, but he was charming, and women and men were both attracted to him. He lived with his disabled parents in their Sylacauga home. He took care of his parents and was devoted to them. Friends say that Billy Jack's parents were his whole life. He always put them first. He did all the shopping. He cooked all of their meals and cleaned the house, mowed their lawn, took them to doctor's appointments, all while holding down a full-time job. He worked a computer terminal at the Russell Athletic Distribution Center in Alexander City. And he kept his private life very private. But according to a contemporary New York Times article, you could look in Billy's bedroom in his parents' white clapboard home and see that it was a gay man's bedroom. He collected Gone with the Wind figurines. He had a picture of Clark Gable kissing Vivian Leigh over his bedroom fireplace, and his windows were adorned with pink chiffon curtains. He also collected antique etchings of antebellum women in hoop skirts. Like many gay men of that time, he was obsessed with the over-the-top fashion and costuming of that period. He was known to shop at flea markets on weekends to decorate his room. In contrast, Billy had also decorated the rest of the home for his parents, and he adhered to their taste. The walls were adorned with religious paintings and renderings, the Last Supper, Jesus praying in the garden, and a golden plaque of the Ten Commandments. One friend, who remained anonymous, said he believed Billy would have left Sylacauga, like most gay people who grew up there. But Billy wanted to stay and take care of his parents. Friends say Billy did have at least 2 short-term relationships with other men, but he would meet them out of town. Another of Billy's friends pointed out that though there had never been any violence towards the gay community in Sylacauga, there were instances where certain townspeople made their feelings clear. Downtown business owners often hung different flags on the light poles outside of their stores. One owner flew a rainbow flag. A local church recognized the symbol and started a campaign to have the flag removed because the flag, quote, promoted a gay lifestyle in Sylacauga. The flag came down fairly quickly. As I said before, Billy's parents did not officially know he was gay. They found out tragically when he was murdered. Billy's mother, Lois, said, quote, "If he was gay, he sure never showed it. He never flaunted himself as being gay or talked about it. And whether he was or not, it don't make me love him any less. He was my youngin." I'm going to pause now for a short commercial break. Though Billy often traveled to Birmingham to hang out at the Toolbox, a local gay bar there, his hometown bar was called The Tavern, the bar his friend Marion Hammond owned. Billy went to The Tavern almost every Friday and Saturday night, and on weekdays when he didn't have to work. He met a man at the tavern named Stephen Mullins. According to Mullins, they were supposedly just acquaintances. There were rumors that Billy and Stephen often sat in the back of the tavern together and then would leave together at the end of the night. But it was probably not a sexual relationship. Billy often gave rides home to drunken friends at the tavern. He sometimes took gas money, but that was it. Stephen Mullins was one of Billy's murderers. At 25 years old, he was an ex-con and stood 6'1" tall and weighed 200 pounds. He wore KKK and white power t-shirts and shaved his head. He had a Nazi SS symbol tattooed on his hand. According to Marion, Stephen was a regular at the bar. She said when he first started coming in, he was a wannabe bad boy. But if someone challenged him, he'd back down. If a black person came into the bar, Stephen would sit away from them and make racist comments, but not actually directly confront them. He would later testify to being a former skinhead. He sounds like your average racist redneck piece of shit. All talk and intimidation, when he was actually a coward. Stephen occasionally worked construction, but he was usually unemployed. About a month before Billy was murdered, Stephen started hanging around with a guy named Charles Butler Jr. His nickname was Charlesy. They had known each other for a few years because Stephen had lived with Charles's half-brother. Billy did not know his second murderer, Charles Butler. The 21-year-old man also occasionally worked construction. He had dropped out of high school and was said to be a quiet guy. At the tavern, he was not known to be a troublemaker. Charles was only 5'3" tall, weighing maybe 120 pounds soaking wet. If he was a white supremacist, he didn't advertise it like Stephen did. And if he was gay, he was discreet. Stephen and Charles didn't know Billy until the night of the murder. Stephen had told Charles that Billy had propositioned him, and Stephen was, quote, planning on doing something about it. According to Stephen, Billy propositioned Stephen by saying he wanted to suck his dick on a few occasions. Billy claimed he didn't say anything back. But Billy's brother Ricky said he didn't believe Billy would proposition anyone. Quote, he wouldn't approach anybody that didn't approach him. He didn't push himself on people. He didn't push the gay life on people. He accepted people for what they were. Marion Hammond, owner of the tavern, agreed and said Billy was really strict about his life in Sylacauga and would even admonish other gay men in the tavern if they were too flamboyant or hit on straight men. He was insistent that there were gay bars for that in Birmingham and it would cause trouble in the Sylacauga bar. He loved the tavern and he didn't want anyone to be offended. From all accounts, Billy strictly dated men in Birmingham or sometimes Montgomery. The rumors about him and Stephen were really just that, rumors. There's no proof that Billy had any sort of relationship with Stephen. In fact, Billy's sister Kathy said that Billy had been telling her about two guys from Fayetteville who wanted to have a threesome. But he told her he didn't want to. He said the two men wouldn't leave him alone. Kathy told him to stay away from them. And Billy said he gave them rides because they were drunk and couldn't get home. Stephen and Charles were both from Fayetteville. After Billy's murder, Stephen's friends said that he took advantage of Billy, mooching rides from him and bumming money. He bragged to friends that he knew who to call, quote, this queer Billy Jack will carry you to the store if you give him money for gas or do things for him. According to Stephen, at around 4 p.m. on February 19, 1999, he called Billy and asked him to pick him up so they could go to the tavern. Billy agreed and picked Stephen up at around 7 p.m. and they rode around drinking beer. Stephen claimed it was then that Billy once again said he wanted to suck his dick. Meanwhile, Charles and his father, Charles Sr., were in a pool tournament at a bar called 11th Frame. At around 8:30 p.m., Stephen showed up at 11th Frame and asked Charles to go to the tavern with him and Billy. Charles said he wanted to finish the tournament and he'd meet up with them later. Also, Stephen said Charles was uncomfortable with being around Billy because he didn't like gay guys. Stephen left 11th Frame and went to the tavern with Billy. The tavern owner, Marion, thought it was odd that Billy parked about six cars down from his normal spot and that there was a guy sitting in his car. Billy told her not to worry about it, that he would come into the bar in just a bit. Stephen later said he didn't go in because he didn't have any money. After about an hour, Billy came out of the tavern and took Stephen to 11th Frame to see Charles. Stephen talked to Charles for a while and got him to agree to go back to the tavern with him and Billy. Evidently, Charles also had money issues. That's why he was hanging out with his dad. His dad loaned him $20 so he and Stephen could go to the tavern. Stephen claimed that he told Charles, while they were still at 11th Frame, that he planned to kill Billy that evening. He later said he told Charles because he thought he could trust him and because he knew that, quote, Charlesy didn't like queers either. After the tournament, Charles took a six-pack of beer and a jar of moonshine from his daddy's car, and then Billy drove the two men to the tavern. When they got there, the police were in the parking lot. Stephen had old warrants out, so they decided to leave and go to Charles's house. They all went inside, and Charles went to change his clothes. Stephen followed him, and according to his official story, he and Charles discussed how they would kill Billy Jack. Stephen basically said they would let Billy believe they wanted to have sex with him, and then Stephen would kill him. Charles suggested an old boat launch on Millerville Highway that locals called the Watersheds. When they were done discussing their plans, Charles came out and told Billy that they should all go to the Watersheds. So Billy drove them there, thinking they were just going to sit outside talking and drinking. Billy's sister Kathy said that Billy would never have driven his car out there because you had to take a gravel road. He loved his car, a gold-colored Honda. But it would seem like he did. Accounts differ. Some people believe that Stephen and Charles forced Billy into the trunk before going to the Watersheds. But this is one part of their stories that matches. They said they asked Billy to drive them all there, and he did. Whether he just wanted to hang out and drink for a good time, or whether he actually expected sex, is debatable. It's certainly possible he was lonely. A friend later told the media that Billy Jack had recently broken up with a married man he had been seeing and that he was very sad about it. Perhaps those feelings nudged Billy into breaking his own rules about his sex life in Sylacauga. We can't be sure. We only have the words of his murderers. And their accounts differ. Charles said that at the Watersheds, Billy started talking about wanting to have a threesome, which made him mad, so he kicked Billy in the chest and back. Then he walked around the front of Billy's car and urinated. Stephen walked over to where Billy was on the ground and started punching him, and then took out his pocket knife and cut Billy's throat. Stephen would later say that he began the assault, that as Charles was urinating, he saw that Billy was watching him, so he grabbed him, threw him to the ground, and cut his throat. And now Billy was on the ground, kneeling on his hands and knees, but not yet dead. Stephen told Charles to open the trunk. And when Billy tried to stand up, Stephen stabbed him twice in the rib cage and told him not to move. Then he told him to get into the trunk, and he and Charles claimed that Billy did climb into the trunk on his own. Then Stephen threw the pocket knife into the river. After Billy got into the trunk, Charles sat in the passenger seat while Stephen drove them to his trailer. They got two tires, matches, and a can of kerosene. Stephen also grabbed an axe handle, and then they threw all of this stuff in the trunk with Billy. You can only imagine Billy's terror, beaten, stabbed, but still alive. And these monsters put kerosene in the trunk with him. He knew he was going to die. Stephen then drove them to a remote area near Peckerwood Creek in Coosa County, outside of Sylacauga. After parking, Stephen opened the trunk, and Billy saw his chance and jumped out quickly, pushing Stephen down the creek embankment where he fell into the water. Seeing this, Charles got scared and ran down the street and into the woods where he hid. Billy got into the car and tried to leave, but Stephen was able to get back up the embankment and back to the car. He told Billy that he wasn't going anywhere and showed him the keys in his hand. Stephen grabbed Billy by his pants legs and drug him away from the car and started beating him with the axe handle. At this point, Charles left his hiding spot and went back to watch. Stephen was viciously beating Billy over the head with the axe handle, and he was barking orders to Charles, He told him to start cleaning the blood from Billy's car. Charles grabbed Stephen's sweatshirt and started wiping the seats. Billy Jack had been punched, kicked, stabbed, and had his throat cut, but he had still survived. He finally fell unconscious after being bludgeoned with the axe handle repeatedly. Stephen and Charles got the tires out of the car, doused them with the kerosene, and lit them on fire. Then they dragged Billy and threw him onto the fire. Stephen threw his sweatshirt and the axe handle into the fire, and then he and Charles watched for about 5 minutes before they took Billy's car and left. They went to Stephen's trailer where he showered and changed clothes while Charles hung out in the kitchen. Then Stephen borrowed his roommate's car, and Charles drove Billy's car. They drove to a gas station and bought a gallon of gas. Then they took Billy Jack's car to the city dump and set it on fire. And then they went to a bar for a drink before heading home. I'm going to pause to hear a word from today's sponsors. Meal planning is one of my least favorite things to do. Even though I love to cook, it's hard to make everyone in my family happy, so I wind up cooking the same meals repeatedly. But Every Plate does it all for me now by planning, shopping, and delivering fresh ingredients right to my door. Every Plate's recipes are simple yet savory, satisfying my whole family while saving me time and money. Even at the regular price, Every Plate is up to 58% cheaper than other major meal kits. And it takes about 30 minutes to cook an Every Plate meal, saving me time that is better spent enjoying dinner with my family. Mexican food is always a hit around my house, and Every Plate has great recipes. This week, we will be having the Easy Chicken Fajitas again, always a favorite. We also love the Every Plate burgers, and coming in our next shipment are the caramelized onion burgers with horseradish aioli, a sauce that is to die for. I also love that they send carrot fries instead of potatoes to help balance the meal and make it healthier. Experience full plates and a fuller wallet with America's Best Value Meal Kit. Enjoy your first week of Every Plate meals for only $3.99 per meal by going to everyplate.com and using code SOUTHERNFRIED1. That's everyplate.com and use the promo code SOUTHERNFRIED1. I have struggled with depression since I was a teenager, and even though I take medication, sometimes I struggle with sudden bouts. Are you struggling? BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. They will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. BetterHelp has over 3,000 licensed therapists in all 50 states, treating depression, anxiety, stress, trauma, grief, and other issues that so many of us suffer from. The service is also available to clients worldwide. From your phone, laptop, or tablet, you can connect with a professional counselor via text, chat, phone, or video, and start communicating with your counselor in under 24 hours. You can also send a message to your counselor at any time. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, and you can schedule weekly sessions with your counselor by video or phone, whichever makes you more comfortable. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so it is easy and free to change counselors if you want to. And everything you share is confidential. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and there is even financial aid available. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/southern. Join over 800,000 people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/southern. When Billy didn't return home by the morning, his friends started searching for him. On February 20th, a woman named Jody, her husband, and her son were taking a shortcut in their truck through the Peckerwood Creek area when they found Billy's body. Jody called the police. In years past, this creek had been used by Baptists and Pentecostals for baptisms. When police arrived, they saw teeth and hair on the ground, a clear sign of a struggle. And then they found Billy's badly burned body with the tires. His skull was split open, his nose was caved in, and it looked like his head had been hit repeatedly. The state medical examiner conducted the autopsy and found that Billy had been hit in the head with a blunt object, which could have been an axe handle, at least 10 times. He concluded that Billy's cause of death was the result of multiple blunt force trauma to the head, and also that, thankfully, Billy was dead before he was burned. According to Charles Butler Sr., his son came home around 3 a.m. the night of the murder. Charles Jr. told his dad he had something important to tell him. He started crying and said, quote, "Daddy, we killed somebody," and said that they had, quote, "kicked a queer's ass." Charles then said he would turn himself in if his dad would go with him, but Charles Sr. said he couldn't turn his own son in. But about a week later, Charles Sr. did tell his friend Joey about what happened. This Joey then went to the police. A day later, on March 1st, 1999, Charles Jr. went to the police and turned himself in. He said he couldn't sleep. He confessed to what he and Stephen had done to Billy Jack. On March 3rd, Stephen gave a statement to the Sylacauga police. He said God told him he needed to confess. At first, Stephen told the police that he and Charles had planned on killing Billy a few weeks before they actually did. Stephen said he killed Billy because he, quote, "did not trust homosexual people." Both Stephen and Charles were arrested for murder and held on $500,000 bail. Stephen and Charles were not charged with a hate crime because in Alabama, sexual orientation is not included in the hate crime statute. Billy's family asked that the state not seek the death penalty against Stephen and Charles. Billy's father, Marion, said, "I can't see taking another human being's life, no matter what." Many witnesses said that a few months before Billy was murdered, Stephen had been to a party where almost everyone there was gay. The witnesses said that Stephen had, quote, "engaged in homosexual activity with another man." This man said that he and Stephen touched each other and had oral sex. He said that he knew both Stephen and Charles. He said that Charles didn't appear to have, quote, "hostility towards homosexual people." Charles told PBS Frontline that Stephen was gay and had been hiding it. Charles said that his attorneys found another man Stephen had been with. He said his attorneys also found that Stephen was flat broke and wanted money in exchange for sex. Then he said, quote, "he lured the both of us out there, promised him sex with the both of us. Instead, it just blew up in his face, and he just didn't know how to handle it. I don't know." Meaning, Stephen lured them both. For Billy, it was sex. But Charles conveniently doesn't mention what Stephen lured him with. In the same interview, Charles told PBS Frontline he kicked Billy because he'd been drinking and was mad that a man he didn't even know had hit on him. Charles said, quote, "it's like he didn't have no respect." When the reporter asked Charles how Billy was disrespecting him, Charles said, "well, sir, I don't know. It's not like I'm some gay tramp out there waiting to be cornholed by some prick." My follow-up question would have been, then why were you out there that night? What did you think would happen? But Charles insisted he didn't think less of gay guys. He said he had a gay friend who he went to gay bars with, and he claimed he was never hit on when he went to a gay bar. This proclamation sounds like when someone insists they aren't racist because they have a black friend. I don't think we will ever get a clear motive other than hatred. Both men denied being gay, but there's evidence to suggest otherwise. They both associated with gay men other than Billy Jack. Shakespeare wrote, "In time, we hate that which we often fear." If Stephen and Charles were gay, they were hiding it. They were in fear. And they may have hated that about themselves. And they used that hatred to take Billy Jack's life. On June 24, 1999, Stephen accepted a plea deal. He would be sentenced to life in prison without parole as long as he pled guilty to capital murder. The death penalty was off the table because of Billy Jack's family. And since Stephen had already confessed, I guess he just didn't see any point in going to trial. Charles was offered a similar deal, but he did not accept it. Instead, he chose to go to trial. Opening statements for Charles's trial began on August 3, 1999, in Coosa County. The prosecution's case was that Stephen killed Billy, but Charles was a willing accomplice. They made it clear that the only reason Billy was killed was because he was gay. The defense's case was that Charles was afraid of Stephen and was under duress when he committed the acts. He did not intend to kill Billy and didn't know that Stephen was going to kill Billy. Charles testified that he never discussed any plans on how to kill Billy with Stephen. Charles said that he only followed Stephen's orders because he was scared of him. Stephen testified against him at the trial, saying it was his idea to go to the watershed, and he was a willing participant in the murder. On August 5, 1999, Charles was found guilty of capital murder. He was charged with capital murder because the murder occurred in the course of a kidnapping. Charles was sentenced to life in prison without parole, exactly what Stephen got. He appealed to the Court of Criminal Appeals of Alabama. On April 28, 2000, his appeal was denied and his conviction was upheld. Billy Jack's family had opposed the death penalty and were happy with the sentences, but forgiveness was harder for some family members. Kathy Gaither, who is also gay, told PBS Frontline, quote, "Daddy said, before you get to heaven, you're going to have to forgive Mullins and Butler so you can see Billy. That one's hard." After Billy Jack's funeral in Sylacauga and burial at the Evergreen Memorial Cemetery there, a memorial was held at Covenant Metropolitan Community Church in Birmingham. This is a branch of the MCC Church I talked about in episode 55, The Upstairs Lounge Fire. The MCC was founded in 1968 in LA by Reverend Troy Perry to minister to the gay community, and they had branches in many larger cities. More than 500 people attended the memorial for Billy Jack Gaither. On March 15, 1999, people in New York marched down Broadway through Times Square for a political funeral in the name of Billy and others who were victims of hate crimes. On February 26, 2019, almost 20 years to the day of Billy Jack's murder, 45-year-old Stephen Mullins was stabbed to death at St. Clair Correctional Facility in Springville, Alabama. Stephen was found unresponsive in a housing area by correctional officers. He was airlifted to a hospital where he died 2 days later from his injuries. According to the Anniston Star, in the weeks before Stephen's murder, he had asked the prison to protect him because he'd been threatened. He wanted to be placed in a protective unit. But prison officials refused and instead put him in a dorm known for violence and serious assaults. He had pleaded with the guards again to be moved the day before he was killed. Christopher Scott Jones was charged with killing Stephen. Christopher was in prison for killing 5 people in a Shelby County apartment in August of 2008. And as for motive, it was close to the anniversary of Billy Jack's murder. But Christopher Jones is also a black man, and Stephen Mullins was a white supremacist who said he had been threatened. Prison officials have a duty to protect inmates, regardless of how heinous their crimes are. The Gaither family protected Stephen from the death penalty, but the St. Clair Correctional Facility allowed that sentence to be carried out anyway. 42-year-old Charles Butler Jr. is currently incarcerated in the William E. Donaldson Correctional Facility in Bessemer, Alabama. After Billy Jack was murdered, the few gay people in Sylacauga were no longer just worried about being harassed or losing their jobs. They now feared for their lives. One of Billy's friends said, "We're all looking over our shoulders now." According to AL.com, Democratic State Representative Patricia Todd was Alabama's first openly lesbian lawmaker. She tried for a long time to amend the hate crime laws in Alabama to include sexual orientation and gender identity, but she was unsuccessful. As of this episode, Alabama still does not include sexual orientation as a hate crime, There is currently proposed legislation to add sexual orientation to the list of hate crimes. But that legislation is not because of the LGBTQ activists or the decades Democrats had spent lobbying for sexual orientation to be included. It's because, this past February, a white former police chief and Republican state representative named Rex Reynolds introduced a bill that would add law enforcement officers to the list of victims covered under the current hate crime statute. The bill passed the House in a vote of 92-0. When it got to the Senate, a black female senator named Vivian Davis Figures added an amendment to include crimes that target someone because of their sexual orientation. Talk about timing and irony. Alabama legislators were more concerned with protecting the police than they were the LGBTQ community, and it took a black woman to speak up. What's more, as AL.com wrote, quote, "Murder of a law enforcement officer is already a capital offense under Alabama law, punishable by death or life without parole. So the penalty enhancement under the hate crime laws does not apply." So basically, it really doesn't do anything except, as Rex Reynolds put it, quote, "send a strong message in Alabama to protect our law enforcement officers." How about sending a strong message to the LGBTQ community that you care about them and their lives too? Megan Kissel, director of Project One America at the Human Rights Campaign, said, quote, "What makes a hate crime so awful is not the individual act against one person, but the fact that it's an act done to create a sense of terror among a community." According to the Human Rights Campaign, as of May 2020, there are 15 states, including Alabama, that address hate crimes, but do not include sexual orientation. Those states are Alabama, Alaska, Idaho, Michigan, Mississippi, Montana, North Carolina, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, South Dakota, Utah, Virginia, and West Virginia. Last year, Tennessee became the first southern state to include protecting transgender individuals to their hate crime statute. However, there is federal protection. In 2009, the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act was passed by Congress and signed by President Obama. Along with many provisions, it gives federal authorities greater ability to engage in hate crimes investigations that local authorities choose not to pursue. Every year, close to the anniversary of Billy Jack's death, there is an annual vigil held on the steps of the Alabama State Capitol to remember Billy and other victims of hate crimes and to demand change to the Alabama hate crime statute. President of Montgomery Pride United, Jose Vasquez, told AL.com, quote, "Alabama oftentimes seems like, and probably doesn't, care about black lives or care about LGBTQ lives. We are still fighting." Vasquez is right. We are in the middle of a new civil rights era, and it's been a long time coming. Our black citizens, along with allies of all colors, are still protesting systemic racism in law enforcement. Confederate monuments, which have long been sources of pain and intimidation, especially during the Jim Crow era, are finally coming down. But people are still being brutalized in the streets. And on Friday, the Trump administration removed protections from the Affordable Care Act that prohibited discrimination in healthcare against transgender patients. The timing is horrific. Not only was it announced during Pride, but in the middle of a pandemic, the likes of which our country hasn't faced in 100 years. The pain from centuries of oppression, hatred, and discrimination is palpable in the United States right now. We need justice. We need reform. We need healing. Over 20 years ago, Billy Jack Gaither lived in a time and in a town where he preferred to stay mostly in the closet. He thought it was safer to assimilate within the straight community. Sadly, It didn't keep him safe from violent hatred. But he didn't just do it for himself. He could have left. He did it for the parents he loved so much, and for the church and community he loved, because Billy Jack had a huge heart. As his friend pointed out, everything he did came from his heart. Tennessee Williams wrote, "What is straight? A line can be straight, or a street. But the human heart? Oh no. It's curved like a road through the mountains." Southern Fried True Crime is written and produced by me, Erica Kelly. The original graphic art is by Coley Horner, and Southern Fried's original music is by Rob Harrison of Gamma Radio. Southern Fried's audio is edited and engineered by Ches Gray of Gray Multimedia. And thank you to Haley Gray for her diligent research on this heartbreaking case. Please remember to subscribe to Fetal Abduction, a true crime podcast. Our second episode premiered on Thursday. Now you have two places to listen to me. And I'd like to remind you to come join my Facebook group. We share memes and have a lot of laughs. It's a really fun community, and we'd love to have you. Hashtag no shit ass is allowed. If you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe, and please tell a friend or rate and review on iTunes. I'm also on most large platforms like Stitcher and Spotify, as well as Stitcher Premium, where you can listen ad-free. If you have any case suggestions, please email southernfriedtruecrime@gmail.com. I'm sorry, I no longer answer private messages on social media. I manage three platforms, and it's just too overwhelming. But please feel free to reach out by email. Not only do I get my most interesting and little-known cases from listener suggestions, I love hearing from you guys. To the people of color still protesting, and to the LGBTQ community that just took another demoralizing blow, I stand with you. To white and straight listeners, please be allies and advocates. It's going to take all of us working together to change the toxic culture in our country. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. Wash your hands, stop touching your face, and y'all take care.